speaker tonight is Ellen. Her home group is the Feet First Speakers Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Please help me welcome Ellen.
Hi, my name is Ellen, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Ellen.
And they always told me you don't say no when you're asked to speak. And as I was walking in tonight, at about 8 o'clock, from picking up my kids, I was hit up in the parking lot and said, Ellen, we haven't heard you speak in so long. You'd be great. Our speaker's lost. You know, and there are no coincidences, because I was going to a meeting last night, and as I was driving there, I was like, oh, you don't want to get there too early, just in case you're asked to speak. Just really. You know, so God has a sense of humor. And my sobriety date is January 12th, 1987, and by the grace of God, I'm still sober. And I'm really, really nervous. I haven't spoken in a while. So I will tell you a little bit about how it was and how it is for me today. I grew up one of six kids in a fairly, I thought, was normal family, but it was really pretty dysfunctional. There were five girls and there was one boy, and my father traveled a lot, and my mom, she was a stay-at-home mom and took care of us kids. And it was, normal, There was a lot of the craziness in our household. You know, there was a lot of fighting. My mom was a disciplinarian, but however, when my father said no, he meant no. You know, there were many times that I got beat by my father. He was a good man, but, you know, when he had habits, he got beat. I can remember getting beat on my birthday when I was only like 8 or 9 because I didn't want to do dishes, you know, and my birthday was celebrated on the weekend, and my real date of birth was during the week, but he didn't figure that out, and I got beat pretty bad. And sent to my room. You know, I can remember always feeling different. I can remember being on the schoolyard, you know, playing and just feeling like I just didn't fit in. You know, I can't tell you what it was, but I just didn't fit in. You know, my childhood, there were traumatic things that occurred as I was a child. You know, and for many years I blamed my alcoholism on that. You know, I could not accept, you know, that it happened and moved on. You know, I was abused, you know, for a number of years, from the age of about 7 to 14. You know, I can also tell you that at the age of 10, my father passed away. And my father, he was my hero. He was the guy that made me laugh. You know, he also made me cry. He was extremely intelligent. He was a family man when he was around, and all the kids in the neighborhood absolutely loved him. And so when he passed away, I was absolutely devastated. And at that point, that's probably the first time I can say I received drugs to numb myself. I was so hysterical as a child that my mother could not get me under control once I found out that he had passed away. And she had called the doctor in, and they helped me down, and they gave me an injection. You know, so I can't tell you, you know, what it was. All I know is that I come from a long line of alcoholics. There are alcoholics on my mother's side. There are alcoholics on my father's side. And there's alcoholics in my immediate family that they just have not found this program yet. So growing up in my house, it was, you know, pretty chaotic. You know, once he died, there was a lot of anger in the household, you know, a lot of fighting between the girls, a lot of punching. The one time my little sister, she, I forget what we were fighting over, but she punched me in the jaw and I went flying through a glass door, and the glass shards fell on my seat and cut my seat all up, and I was so angry. I started chasing her through the house and out the back door, and meanwhile, my sister, who's a nurse, she was following me because my feet are bleeding, and we're running around the city block. You know, I'm going to kill my sister, you know, and the other one's trying to save me. You know, it was just insane. The neighbor boy, he used to come up to our house after school because he felt our house was more entertaining than the comics that were on TV. You know, I just saw him at a wedding two weeks ago, you know, and he still talks about the insanity in our house. You know, it was just so crazy. You know, I can remember, you know, getting into arguments, cat fights with my sisters, you know. And I mean, when I was angry, I went into a full-blown rage. And, you know, they'd come at me with their hands up, and I'd just grab their arms, and I'd twist them until they were down on their knees, begging to stop. You know, I was just full a lot of anger and rage. And blowing up, my first strength, I believe, was in about the seventh or eighth grade. One of the girls, she lived about three blocks away from me, and her household was very similar to mine. She had sisters and she had a brother. Her father, he was alive, but her mother was dead. But her father was never home, and Graham, she was always there. And so what we did was we would go down to her house and we would drink. Gramps or her older brother would get us alcohol, and we would sit around the kitchen table and we would sit there and drink. And it was really, really a lot of fun, you know, because I was so introverted. I didn't talk. I was so quiet. I didn't talk a whole lot. I didn't laugh a whole lot. There wasn't a lot to be happy about, you know, as far as I was looking at life. And the first time I put a drink in me, I loved it. It was beer. I loved it. I hated the taste, but I absolutely loved the way I felt. You know, it's just the warmness going in, and all of a sudden, I could talk. I could laugh. I could be funny. I was extremely skinny as a child. I weighed 89 pounds when I graduated from high school. In fact, I just had an interview the other week, and the girl that was interviewing me was one of the girls that I partied with. And he said, Broche, my last name at that time was Broche. She was like, Broche, you look so great. You finally put some weight on. I'm like, you're damn right I did. You know, because I just feel like I'm aging gracefully. You know, all through, in junior high school, what we would do is we would get alcohol, you know, when we could. My sisters at that time, I'm not really trying to tell you my age, but we had the paper license. And each of my sisters, all our names began with E. And so it was, you know, no problem. I knew when their birthdays were, and I could use their licenses. You know, I look at my licenses. I saved all my licenses. People have different quirks, but I have every single license I ever had. And looking at it, there was no way I looked 21 years old, you know. But I used to go and get served. You know, we would go down to Jersey in high school, and that was, you know, that was the very best thing. You know, it was like I met. But we would go down to my girlfriend's house, you know, on the weekends, and we would drink. And I can remember one particular time I got really, really drunk, and the two of my friends walked me home and had their arms around me, and, you know, they rang the doorbell, you know, let me go, and down I went. You know, I don't remember anything else except the next day. My two older sisters, because my mom was always out, you know, were like, Ellen, you were, you know, gone last night. And I was like, oh well, it must have been good, I don't remember. You know, I believe I was a blackout drinker right from the get-go. You know, I don't have a whole lot of memories. You know, I can't tell you if it's because I blocked them out or because alcohol and drugs blocked them out. You know, I can tell you in high school, I worked part-time at a nursing home in the restaurant section for the older people. And I don't know how I did it, because there were many a times, you know, that I was just so drunk or so high, you know, that we would just pour coffee and miss the cup. You know, thank God we didn't seriously injure any of the patients. You know, it was just crazy. I can say to you that my mind was altered in some fashion 24/7 all through high school, all through community college. You know, my older sister, she used to pick us up slow ginses. I can remember one, not slow gin, slow gin, you know, and she said she was going to hide it in the ferns, and I couldn't find it, you know, and me and my girlfriend, we were going crazy. You know, we just couldn't find it. We were all through those ferns and everything. You know, she hadn't gone and gotten it yet. You know, obviously I had a problem way back then. You know, my mom was a big believer. She didn't want us outside, you know, of the home drinking. She preferred us in the home drinking, you know, so she would supply the beer. I can remember taking her beers, you know, and it would be Schmidt, you know. It just wasn't good. My father, when he was alive, he made homemade wine, and he also made white lightning. And we had a cold cellar that he had built in the basement, and the shelves were 4 feet deep, and he made gallons of this wine. And I can remember in ninth grade, like, we were going to this party, and it was in the middle of the Rose Garden up in Bethlehem, and it was like we needed alcohol, you know, and I can remember stealing a gallon of my father's wine, and I wasn't much of a wine drinker, but we got drunk on it, and I can just remember, I have vivid memories of just falling over, you know, into the rose bushes and in the Rose Garden. It was really quite a scene. But I went to high school, you know, I was in the pep club, and that didn't stop me, you know. Nothing really stopped me. 24/7, I was really screwed up. I had to be outside of myself. The one time we were going to cheer at one of our home games, and we went down to Jersey first, and when we came back, we were really smashed. And, like, I came out of a blackout in the middle of the football field with the team on the field with me and my other girlfriend. You know, blackouts were a common theme for me. You know, I never knew where I was going to wake up, you know, or what I had done. You know, my car, you know, I could tell you so many stories about my car. You know, we live in a very good neighborhood, and I find my car parked around the corner and, like, 4 foot from the curb. I'm not the best parker now, but still, you know, I would look out the window and I'd be like, oh my God, it's in the middle of the street, you know, so I'd have to do that. Or the one night, you know, I was at the Lehigh Valley Mall, I forget the name of the club's name, but we were so screwed up, and we came out of that club, and, you know, I thought it was my car. You know, we spent an hour trying to break into somebody else's car. You know, it was somebody else's car that we were trying to break into. You know, I guess one of my infamous stories, you know, with my car, and I can't even tell you, I don't remember being that messed up. Doing this, but I was going to go out. You know, I had the proverbial, you know, I'm not going to do this again. I definitely am not going to do this again, you know. I'd go to school, you know, I'd come home, you know, we'd party. you know, and then once I got to college, it was like, okay, I'm going to not party, but I'd always end up partying, you know. But this one particular night, if anybody's familiar with Bethlehem, I was coming from Allentown, going down 22, and I got off of 378. I lived in Center City, Bethlehem, near the firehouse at Fifth Avenue. And all I remember is going down 378 and feeling a jolt. And I was like, what the hell? And I'm like, oh, I'm in the grass. So I get up back on the road, you know, not thinking anything of it. You know, drive home, pull up, you know, park my car, and, you know, I went in the house, and I was living with this guy by now, and, you know, I said to him, I think I was in an accident. And I said, yeah, just check the car in the morning. You know, it was like no big deal, because I didn't think it was a big deal. What I did was, I was going down 378, and the pole looked like a stop, what a stop sign's on. I guess I hit one of those. It got hung up on my bumper, broke off, spun through the air, harpooned through the roof of my car, through the back seat, and I was driving with like six or seven pole dragging through the bottom and sticking out the top, and it hit my head by inches. You know, I was pretty horrified at that. And thank God he was a drug dealer, and he had people that needed to make some quick money. So, you know, they fixed up my car real quick. You know, but, you know, that's the kind of insanity, you know, I had in my life. I graduated from high school, and I was supposed to go to college. And at that time, I had a sister living in Sweden. I had a sister in college in California, and I had another sister in college in Cookstown. And I was accepted to Bloomsburg. I had always wanted to be a teacher, and so I was really excited. I had arrived. I was going to college because I used to go visit my sister up at Cookstown, and she was my party buddy, and we used to get really pretty crazy up there. So it was my turn. So, you know, I showed my mom the acceptance letter, and I was really excited. And at that point, she had claimed there was no more money. And I was absolutely furious, as angry. How dare she do this to me? She's ruining my life. I know what I wanted to be. Now, what I found out once I got into recovery was, by then, her father had been an alcoholic. He died an alcoholic, and she knew the signs and the symptoms of alcoholism. She knew I was in full-blown alcoholism, and she was afraid that if I went to school that I would never come home, you know, so she didn't allow that. So I went to community college. Community college was better than high school because I only went half a day, and the other half a day we partied. We went down to Jersey and we used to drink. You know, I was with older guys, and you know, we just used to drink and get crazy. I did a lot of drinking. I did a lot of drugs. I hung out in very seedy places, and you know, I think a lot of why I drank was because of fear. You know, to this day, that's one thing that will trip me up, is fear, you know, but I just have to walk through it, you know, to get me to the other side. I was about, 21 or 22. I had been going out with this guy for about 4.5 years, and, you know, I don't know, I thought I was magical or something, you know, like I could disappear. But I would go to his apartment. He was going to Lehigh, and, you know, I'd go in the front door, and we'd get all messed up. Well, just give me one drink, you know, I'm an alcoholic. Give me one drink, and I want 1,000. He has to stay home and study. That's not for me. So I'd go out the back door, And then, like, 5 hours later, I'd show up like I was locked out, you know? Like, if my thinking was just so out of whack, and my perception of things was just so completely crazy. That relationship, I could say that was kind of the beginning of the end. What happened was, you know, we got into a fight, a good fight. I lost. I had two black eyes, and I had a bruised spinal column. You know, he just picked me up and heaved me down a flight of cement steps. You know, I was pissed off as hell. You know, the cops were there. You know, I'm going off on the cops. I remember, you know, and I'm going to get in my car, and the cop looks at me and he goes, "You're not even going to get in your car." I mean, I was that wasted. You know, that's one thing I like to do. You know, I love to drive when I was drunk. Love to drive. You know, I had, by now I had been living in Quakertown, and I drive from Quakertown to Bethlehem to party, and then from Bethlehem to Quakertown, and the road that I live on today is the road that I travel, and I am so afraid that I'm going to hit a deer today. It's incredible. My husband always says to me, "Why are you driving so slow?" And I have the high beams on. I'm so afraid I'm going to hit a deer. You know, back then when I was drinking, I had no fear. Many a times I woke up in my apartment on the kitchen floor in vomit, in pee. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered. When I went to the bar, you know, I was a puker. You know, bottom line, I was a puker. How do you solve that? Bring your toothbrush and toothpaste. I kept that in my purse, you know. Who wants to talk to a girl with bad breath, you know? So, you know, you could dress me up, and I'll tell you, I looked good. I had really long hair, and I would always dress up to the hill. By the end of the night, you know, I'd be missing a shoe, hole in a hose, you know, drinks spilled down me. You know, I did not do drinking very well. But, so I graduated from community college, and I was sent off to my first job, and I had no idea. You know, so many of these people's lives that were in my life, you know, I just created havoc. It was all about me. I was very self-centered. I had no idea that I was affecting anybody. I always thought I was only hurting myself. You know, in my first job, you know, it was my first job. Call out sick whenever I felt. You know, I worked in a hospital, and there was a woman there. She was a Christian woman, and you know, I believe God put special people in my life, in critical points in my life, and she was one of them. You know, and she used to sit down and she used to pray with me and talk with me, and she would take me to her church, and I was all screwed up. By now I'm going in and out of psychiatric, in and out of the hospital for psychiatric diagnosis of depression. I was having severe depression. 30 days, you know, every like 6 months I'd end up in the hospital, you know, and I just could not connect, you know, drinking. And they could not connect drinking either. They never bothered to ask me if I drank, or if they did, I'm sure I lied about it. You know, because not only was I admitted to these hospitals, I also worked at this hospital, so I knew the doctors very well. And he looked at me, I didn't look like an alcoholic or some bad person. You know, I just looked like a poor girl, you know, who was abused, you know, whose father died as a kid. And that's what they always focused on, you know, was that. They didn't bother to look at, did I have a problem with drinking and drugs, you know. And you know, I was in and out of the hospital. I was going to church services with this woman, and you know, we used to pray, you know, all the time. And I can remember the one time, it was a Good Friday, I believe it was a Good Friday, she had taken me to church, and I had been there a number of times, and they had a big cross in the front. And you know, all I can remember is I used to, you know, promise I wouldn't drink. You know, that there was something mentally wrong with me. I truly thought there was something mentally wrong with me. And what they did was you wrote your cares upon a piece of paper and then you went up and you nailed it on the cross. You know, and I can remember writing that and nailing it on the cross and just believing that, you know, if there's a God, He is going to stop this mental insanity that's going on. You know, it was so insane. And my thinking was so off. At one time, I was dating two guys. One was a big-time drug dealer, and another was in the seminary. I mean, it was crazy. You know, I would go out Friday night with the drug dealer, and I didn't go out Saturday night because I had to be okay to get up for church Sunday morning. You know, I mean, that is how black and white my world was. And it was just insane. I was about, I believe my last drink was, you know, somewhere around New Year's Eve. What had happened was I had gone out, well, I was going out with this guy, and I went to work, and it was half a day of work. We had champagne, and this guy wanted to go to his friend's house for a quiet New Year's Eve. Not me. I wanted to go out and raise hell. You know, my sisters were partiers, and I loved hanging out with them. They were the wildest, craziest. Like, if people thought I was crazy, they were 10 times crazier. You know, and when you put us all together, it was all hell broke loose. Everybody knew the Brocious Girls. It was wild. So anyway, I had called him and he said, no, he wanted to do this. And I was like, damn, how am I going to do this? I got to see my sisters. So I got off early. I had some champagne in me from work. And I decided I'd go up to Bethlehem and stop and see each one of my sisters. And I can only remember my one sisters. And they were getting pretty wild there. And I remember I had to leave. And I left there. And then I remember this guy picking me up, and that's all I remember. We were supposed to stay at this other couple's house that night, and I woke up the next morning in my bed. No recollection, none of the New Year's. And all I thought was I had fun, you know. So what had happened was he called me. And he just said to me, Ellen, I got to tell you something. You're one of the nicest girls I've ever met. You're extremely beautiful. But when you drink, you're a monster. And he never wanted to see me again. I was like, oh well. You know, it was never my fault. You know, it was always somebody else's fault. I can remember, you know, a period of time after that. And then I ended up back in the hospital. Because, you know, I probably hit another severe depression due to the breakup, due to the drinking, you know, due to everything. You know, it was everybody else's problem. And at that point, I think that was my third hospitalization for that year. And the physician who was treating me, she knew me personally also. And I was in the hospital, and she said to me, Ellen, she said, I think you have a drinking problem. And no, I didn't have a drinking problem. There was no way I had a drinking problem. You know, and she said she wanted me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, all the other times when I was discharged from the hospital, I was discharged on a lot of medications, and I was sent to groups. Nobody ever mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous. I forget the name of the different groups that they had sent me to. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, in my mind, I'm saying, no effing way. I am not going. I am not one of those people in a trench coat and a bottle. There was no way I was going to do it. you know, and I told her I wasn't going to do it. The meeting was on a Friday night, and she just looked at me and she said, you know, Alan, you've been in and out of this mental hospital, you know, 3 times this year. She said, I would have no problem having you admitted to the state hospital. And at that point, I knew she could, because I had worked in the hospital, and that scared the living shit out of me. But there was no way I was going to let her think she could tell me what to do. You know, I was that type of person. You told me what to do, I did the opposite. Extreme opposite. You know, so I waited a week, you know, and I decided that I was going to go to the meeting Friday night at Quaker Town Hospital. And I went to that meeting, and there was a young lady there by the name of Beth, and Beth was telling parts of my story, and it was amazing to me. I was just like, oh my God. Like, I could relate so much to this woman. You know, I believe that was a moment of clarity for me. And when they took the break, there were people laughing and carrying on and just having fun. And I was just like, wow, I want to be a part of this. You know, I still didn't think, like, I could not connect that alcohol was the problem at all. I really could not connect that. And, you know, and then when they shared at halftime, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is where it's at. Like, inside, I knew that I wanted what they had. And so I was discharged from the hospital on a lot of medication. Because, see, they told me that I had these depressions, you know, from my childhood. My childhood was so horrible, and, you know, this and that, and they blamed a lot on it. And I can say to you, I was taking 4 to 5 medications 3 to 4 times a day, you know. And for many, many years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can say to you, I walked around taking those medications because I believed what they were telling me. So I was discharged. I had a very good job, and I couldn't go back to that job because I could barely read or I could barely write. My brain was just so fried. And I ended up volunteering. I volunteered at a church. And what I did was I typed envelopes and stuffed letters inside them. And that's about all I could do. You know, and I was out of work for a number of weeks. And eventually I chose to leave that job and I went on to another job and started my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I met a lot of good people in AA when I first came around. A lot of people gave me a lot of great direction. George Monroe, he's no longer with us, but he was like my father to me in AA, a father that I hadn't had. And he'd keep an eye on me because I was 27 years old. I was really skinny. I was single. And there were a lot of guys chasing me. And boy, I was into that, you know, and that's what it was about for me, you know. And the reason why I kept coming to AA was because I loved all you people. I could relate to you. I understood what you said. I didn't drink because that was a requirement to be here. In my mind, I just didn't drink. I did not put, you know, drinking alcohol, doing drugs as my problem. I just didn't drink because I wanted to belong. You know, I wanted to be someplace and people accepted me here and loved me. And George, he loved me. He took me from my very first car. And it was such a neat experience. Like the guy, George was an auto, he sold cars for a living and he had said, the guy had said to him, is this your daughter? And he looked at me and he winked. He said, yes, she is. She's my daughter. You know, and that made me feel really good. Finally, I met my dad, you know, in AA. You know, and he loved me just as a kid. he would say, honey, sometimes you would come in the room. He said, I didn't know which way your head was spinning. If it spun right, I knew you were in a good mood. If it spun left, I knew all hell was breaking loose tonight. He said, you were so damn crazy. You know, and I felt really crazy. And I just kept coming back. I just kept coming to the meeting. You know, I was going to, that was a Friday night meeting. See, I didn't realize, you know, that you would feel good when you went to meetings, you know. So I was going to meetings just the nights that I drank, okay, Friday and Saturday night. You know, I drank other nights, but Friday and Saturday night. And then I was at a Saturday night meeting, and I don't recommend it. I saw some guy, and I was like, he is my husband. You know, I've had many a husband in AA, in my mind. You know, I never truly got married until much later in life. You know, but each guy was going to be the husband. But anyway, what I did was I started going to meetings in search of this guy. But what happened was he wouldn't be at these meetings. Because I didn't know much about where they were and what meetings he would go to and stuff. But I would come home from those meetings and I'd feel a little bit better. And it was like, wow, I really feel good, you know. So that's how I started going to more and more meetings. You know, I used to hang out at the diner, you know, when it was John Plain and Fancy. They had it designed a little bit different. What I used to be able to pull around, drive past, and the section that the AAer sat was by a window, and you could drive around and see if anybody was there. And if somebody was there, then you parked and went in, you know. And I used to do that, you know, a whole lot. But, you know, I just kept coming around. You know, I can say I really didn't officially do that. I really can say that. I was really, really screwed up in my mind. It was still all about me, you know. I was still on all those medications. I was still seeing the doctor. I was about, I think it was about 10 years sober, you know, and at that point in my life, you know, Zoe was sponsoring me, and she taught me so much about me. You know, she had taught me, I can remember one time, I was just so angry with my mom. I didn't care. You know, my behaviors were not those of somebody in recovery. You know, and I had wrote my mom this letter, you know, and I had told Zoe that I was going to send it to her. And she said, Ellen, please give it to me first. And I'll read it. And then we can send it. And I said, okay. So I had given it to her, and I remember she had started to cry. She said, Ellen, you cannot send that to anybody. That's a horrible letter. Mm-hmm. You know, she helped me to grow up. She was like the mother that I had never had. You know, she gave me a lot of love. She gave me a lot of direction. You know, she was very, very important to me in my life. She taught me a lot of very good things. You know, and I just kept coming to meetings. You know, trying to help the next person, you know, speak when I was asked to speak. You know, I looked at as far as the steps were concerned. I was still in counseling. Let me tell you, I couldn't have done more of a thorough inventory in my steps better than what I had done with my counselors. That's how I saw it, you know. But what had happened to me was I was 17 years sober. And I just felt like my life was out of control. I was either going to kill myself or I was going to drink. And I was really dead serious inside. I was hurting. I was dying. And I just couldn't understand. And like people were looking up to me because I had 17 years sober, and I'd be like, you know, I just have a few more days, you know, than you. I have a little bit better coping skills, but right about now, I'm about ready to kill myself. I'm dead serious. And previous to this, you know, I had met a guy in AA, and he had what I wanted. He absolutely had what I wanted. I didn't know what he had, but he had it. And he only had a year sober. And I was like, damn, how does he have it? And I have all this time, I just could not understand. You know, and so I knew what meeting he was going to be at. And what he did, what I did was I drove to that meeting and I waited for him afterwards. And I met him in the parking lot and I told him, I said, I'm going to tell myself I'm going to drink. I said, I can't stand the pain anymore. And he talked to me, you know, and he said, Alan, I want to take you through the steps. And I was like, okay. And he said, I want you to go to the feet first meeting. And I was like, all right. And so we started to go through the steps. He took me through the steps. You know, and I was like, okay. And I'm taking notes. I'm just in my big book. I have all these notes. And he's like, don't write. You'll remember it, you know. And I was like, okay. And so I thought, you know, he was going to be like the other sponsors that I had, you know, somebody that I call up and explain and, you know, this and that. And I can remember I called him up because life wasn't going too well in our household. And he said, who have you helped lately? I'm like, what the F do you mean, who have I helped lately? You don't understand. And like, I started to go, no. With that, I took the phone, slammed it down. I'm notorious for this. Hit redial and finish off what I have to say because I get so frustrated. I don't do it often because I really don't like to make amends to people. You know, so I usually keep stuff pretty much inside. So I did have to make amends to him. So he had been sponsoring somebody else, and I knew her. And, you know, about a year had passed, and, you know, he said, Eleanor, I want you to hook up with Karen. You know, Karen can take you through the steps again. And I'm like, okay. So, I believe it was 2 summers ago, Karen, who had 2 years, took me through the steps. At first, it was very humbling to me. But at that point, I had to be open and willing. And I had a ball that summer. We met. There were 3 of us that started in the beginning. And as she said, she was going to take us through the steps to teach us so that we could take other people through the steps. She took us, me and my other girlfriend, we met at my house, and we went through steps 1, 2, and 3 together, and then we needed to branch off. And Karen and I went through the rest of the steps, and we have really a beautiful relationship today. She has helped me so much. But through that, it really has opened me up. And I really want to help other people, you know. And I'm scared. But the only way to relieve my pain is to help other people. So I'm scared of, you know. And I go back and forth with this. And I really can say to you, I really think I'm getting it because I don't like that pain. You know, I absolutely don't like it. That hole in the soul. You know, when I was younger, I used to try to throw it up. I was not anorexic and I was not bulimic. But I had such pain inside of me that I thought throwing it up would get rid of it. But it never did. You know, shocking. Nothing ever got rid of it except being with another recovering alcoholic. That's what I found. Here I am, 20-some years sober, and I finally find this out, or figure this out. You know, my life changed so much from that time on. It was incredible. I'd start to meet people, I'd start to get close, and I'd get scared, and I'd back away. You know, and the pain would come back. And so I've just learned that I have to forge through that fear. And sometimes that fear is so debilitating to me. I started school through all this. After I got done with the steps, it was advised to me that I might want to go back to school because I had 2 degrees that added up to nothing. You know? And I was just like, okay. And I can remember that day, I went on a computer, and we had this old computer that Zoe had given us about maybe 8 or 10 years earlier. So it was very old. And I was looking and doing some research, and I had been out on an FMLA because I had surgery, and I was going back to work the next day. And so I'm researching these different colleges, and all of a sudden the screen goes black. And I'm like, well, Doc, let me tell you something. If you want me to go to college, I need a new computer, first of all. This is not going to hack it. I figured I'd look at things when I got back to work. When I got back to work, I pulled up my email, the very first email, and I still have it to this day because I don't know if I'm going to frame the email or my degree first. Mm-hmm. But the email said about the college that I wanted to go to, the degree I wanted to go to. If you're one of the first so-and-so to sign up, you get a free laptop computer and 2 free courses. And I was like, oh. Okay, made the phone call, they interviewed me, they just, yes. Then I had to take a writing exam, and I hadn't taken a writing exam in 20 years, and I was like, oh my God, and you know, the medical directors that I was working with, you know, they knew I was very different, you know, they didn't understand what was so different about me, and so, I was sitting there talking to my medical director, and he said to me, Ellen, what do? You think leaders are born, or do you think you can become a leader? So we ended up in this debate. It was a Friday afternoon. There was no conclusion to it. It was just our thoughts kind of thrown out into the air. Tuesday, I went into college to take the writing exam, and it's this secret question that they give you. And so they hand me my piece of paper, and the question was, is a leader born, or can we, you know, develop into a leader? And I was so stunned. I sat at the computer for 20 minutes. Absolutely stunned. I had a half hour to type. You know, God is such a very, very important person, thing, whatever, in my life. I depend on him constantly. I'm going through school, the craziest school that I've ever done. The courses are 5 weeks long. There are 17 of them, and I graduate come August. I have to do presentations, and the biggest fear I have is getting up in front of the class and doing this speaking. You know, I had never done Excel, I had never done PowerPoint, and I taught myself it. People in the class taught me. You know, people in AA, they sat down right before I was ready to start school. The computer that I was going to use until I got my new laptop computer died. So, I had to give my computer to somebody in the program, and they set it all up for me. You know, they set everything up. You know, the people in AA have helped me grow up. You know, I had a lot of growing up. My perceptions on life, you know, were so far out there. You know, at times, they're still out there. In August, I was asked to start an intensive outpatient AA group, and at first I thought, oh my God, it's for teenagers. I have no children. I could not have any children. However, when I got married, my husband did have a one-year-old son, and he's been the joy of my life. He's now 19. He lives with us every other weekend, and in the summer. And at 19, once he graduated from high school, he decided to come live with us. It's been exciting. I love him. He's like my son. He is a good kid. He does not drink. He does not use drugs. We're very open with him. He's known all along about his father and myself. You know, so I started this intensive outpatient group, and periodically I'd nab people from this room and other rooms and have asked them to come up and speak for me up in Allentown. And, you know, come Thursday night, I don't want to go. When I get there, it's the best thing that I've ever done, you know. I mean, the kids have changed my life, and I never thought that would ever happen, you know. And now I go up to Allentown prior to this meeting, and I'll pick whoever wants to go up and bring them down to the meeting, and then run them home afterwards. Because it's important to me. It doesn't matter what age they are. They need to get the message, you know. If they're here for the right reasons, wonderful. If they're here for the wrong reasons, that's okay. At least they're getting a message. You know, that may stick with them someday. You know, so many people in my life, you know, have been there for me. You know, my husband, when I first met him, you know, I know the story now why he hooked up with me, because he heard I was the craziest broad in AA. That made me feel really good when I found that one out. But I think he's probably one of the craziest guys. And, you know, our marriage hasn't been easy. You know, people in AA, they've been there for us. But the best thing that we can do for each other when we're going through something is to be helping another alcoholic. What we have found is when we're doing the work that we're supposed to be doing, that God has set us out to do, you know, our marriage is incredible. When we stop doing it, stop working with people in AA, let me tell you, it's not pretty in our household. You know, we've grown a lot. I got married when I was 36. She's a little bit younger. And we've been together for approximately 18 years, you know, and I can say we have a good relationship today. You know, it was hard times, you know. I put him, he didn't drive. I got to meet him when he first lost his license. And he lost his license for 11 years. I met him at year one. You know, but I had to let him do what he had to do. You know, he had to ride his bike. I didn't make him lose his license, and I wasn't going to be his taxi. I would help him out, you know, but he worked his program, and I worked my program, and we have grown a lot. The two of us really grew a lot in the program, and, you know, all I can say is, if it wouldn't be for AA, you know, my life would have ended much differently, you know, much differently. You know, and you know, one time, you know, I had said to Zoe, I was angry that I was an alcoholic. I was really, really angry. You know, and I used to have temper tantrums and hissy fits, you know, and she stood in there with me, you know, but she said to me, Ellen, she said, if you wouldn't have come to AA, she said, you would have never met me, and you would have never met this person or that person. How would your life have been without being in it? You know, my life today, you know, it's not all roses. Right now I'm unemployed, you know, but it's a good thing, because you know why? A lot of women from AA call me during the day, you know. I get to go out to lunch with people, you know. It's just really, it's an exciting time in my life. And I can honestly say when it occurred, it wasn't. I thought life was over. I was so used to working, you know, but I had to put my faith and trust in God, you know, and He guides me and He shows me where I need to be, what I need to be doing, you know. I love life today, you know, and I have a sister and a brother-in-law that should be in this program. They know I'm in it. You know, they said when I had 13 years that they would get sober. You know, they're still not sober. They haven't gone to a meeting, and they've distanced themselves from me. That's all right. When it's their turn, it's their turn. I had a drink every drink, and I had a drug every drug to get me here, because I'm so happy that I'm here. And that's all I have to share. Thank you.